Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 346. Happy Wii U 10th anniversary, everybody.
What's a Wii U?
I don't know. I was just told to say this. I'm not actually sure myself.
There's a gun to your head.
Yeah. Talk about the Wii U. Neil's here, as he often is. I'm John. This intro has been perfectly in order and very well crafted. We're going to talk about the Wii U, because on the day this episode comes out, it is in fact the 10th anniversary of the Wii U, noted for being Nintendo's best-selling system of all time. So, worth talking about. Probably by the time this episode comes out, I will have a video up on the YouTube channel as well, talking about, you know, the life and times of the Wii U. And it is funny, because the Wii U does have many of Nintendo's most highly praised and best-selling video games on it. Just not, nobody bought them there.
I mean, Mario Kart 8 is indeed on that system.
It is.
And people did buy that. I mean, the world made fun of Polygon's pie chart for like why Mario Kart 8 was going to fail. And like Mario Kart 8 outsold those expectations significantly.
Yes, it did have some, but like when you compare like Mario Kart 8 on Wii U was, I closed out of it already. I had the number.
It's up. Like five, six million. I'm probably off.
It was several million. Yeah. Like it actually sold legit, like even outside of Wii U numbers, Mario Kart 8 did like real video game numbers. It's just that on Switch, it sold like more copies than there are humans on Earth.
There was some consternation recently because Nintendo revealed their Black Friday bundle, and it's just a Switch with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. And there was some discussion on the Nintendo Report Discord of like, well, like, why don't they have Splatoon or something else? And it's like, well, like, what other game are you going to put as part of that bundle? And I remember looking it up and I forget the exact breakdown, but it's something like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is like the fifth best selling game of 2021.
Right. Of 2021.
Right. Or at least on Switch. Like, I think like two Pokemon games and Animal Crossing might have outsold it. And like, that was it.
It pretty consistently finds its way into the top 10 like monthly sales charts, though.
Yeah,
like it's
selling millions of copies a year, and it came out in 2017 and technically came out in 2014.
I'm not sure who they are, but there are apparently still a lot of people who do not own Mario Kart 8 and are looking to buy it on a daily basis. It is ridiculous.
I mean, we're slowly running out of people to buy it, so they'll have to do Mario Kart 8 Deluxier.
Well, they can once the booster pass finishes in like 3 years by the rate they're currently putting it out at, then they'll be able to do Mario Kart 8 Deluxe Definitive Edition.
Yep.
Before inevitably doing a second season of the booster course pass, because it's like the game will still be selling and Mario Kart 2 will still be putting out levels.
We are rapidly coming up on the 10th anniversary of Mario Kart 8.
We are. Yeah. And it's the 10th anniversary, and it is more of a live service game than Splatoon is.
Pretty much. It took 3 months two months to have a major update for Splatoon.
Yeah, well, and yeah, Mario Kart 8 has become more of a new game this year than Splatoon 3 is to Splatoon 2.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Anyway, we're gonna talk about Wii U.
Splatoon was on the Wii U, it's relevant.
Yeah, and back then it was like a new game.
Yeah, it was fresh.
Yeah, and then they just stopped, and they're just, what if we just put out this same game many times? But don't worry, I'm sure the chill season will save it.
So John, where were you when there were, like, were you a part of the Project Cafe rumor scene? Were you following that?
Yeah, because this was, okay, like, I mean, when did the cafe stuff start up? Was that 2010?
Might have been late 2010 or early 2011. I know it definitely got like fast and furious before E3 2011, because there was, I mean, you had 3DS hype throughout 2010 because that's when that got revealed. And then I think there was chatter about their next console probably late 2010, early 2011.
Yeah, I graduated high school in 2010 and then took like a year off to just work on a bunch of independent films doing random jobs on them. So I had a lot of time and was highly invested in Project Cafe. which to this day I think is a really good name. If they just put out the system and it was called the Cafe, I think that has a chance to have done better than Wii U. I think it's less confusing somehow.
I mean, if you believe Reggie, the concept of Wii U is utopian. So
yes, unique. What is it? Unique. Oh, what's the other one? Universal. Unique. Yeah, you.
Yeah, I forget.
I don't remember. Unifying, unique, unifying, yeah. Utopian.
Yeah.
God damn.
So I was at the I was in the audience for both of the E3 press conferences. I mean, Nintendo's last E3 press conference, the live one, was E3 2012. But for 2011, I hope I still have these notes, because I would basically during the press conference just like take chicken scratch notes, because it was really fun. I realized it was fun to like reflect on that. Because yeah. A lot of it was like me like being like, wait, what are they hinting at? And I thought for like a hot minute that like he was the name of the system was going to be the Utopia, because of the way that he phrased that and like being in the audience. I was like, what is happening?
Honestly, also a better name.
Yeah.
You'd be hard pressed to find a worse name than Wii U for the Wii U.
But I do have this really vivid memory of that when Wii U was named and it was revealed for the first time at E3 2011, when it was just like, when it didn't even have analog sticks, it had circle pads on the gamepad, which I don't know, like that might have been fine. But I remember being very excited, walking out of that press conference, being stoked for the next Nintendo system.
Yeah.
I remember immediately talking to people who were at home. They were like, is this an add-on? What the hell does the console look like? What is happening? No one has any idea what's going on. And I ignored it at the time because I was a naive little boy, happy to be covering Nintendo games. But that should have been like warning right away that this was going to be a debacle, because there was just nobody had any idea what the system was. And I do think for people who played it at E3 2011, when it was still like it was a concept, those technically weren't game demos, they were game experiences, even if most of them all got turned into games for the next year for Nintendo Land or New Super Mario Brothers U or what have you. Game and Wario, I think there was the pirate game was there. But if you played the thing, it was super cool. Like the way that the gamepad interacted with the, you know, the TV and how that all worked, like it was innovative. It was unique, unifying, and utopian. It was really neat. And then they found absolutely no way to make that compelling to a wider market. And I think some of that is probably because of the gimmick only goes so far.
So, I mean, I'll be honest. I watched this E3 from home. Probably was G4 still a thing in 2011? What was, maybe. How did you watch E3 on TV in 2011? Because that's how I did it.
It might have still been G4, because I know they did. I mean, obviously, yeah.
Saying I watched E3 on TV feels like a very old fashioned statement.
Because I do remember I met Billy Berghammer for the first time. I think it was outside Nintendo's E3 2009 press conference, because he was working at G4TV.com at the time. And they were like, they had a setup to like film live from the press conference. Yeah. So I think that was the thing where they did have like the cable feed that, you know, your bigger outlets that were more video focused could use. So yeah, it makes sense that it was probably on G4.
Yeah. So I watched it like that. And I remember watching that reveal and immediately registering. And I mean, I guess I just maybe had enough of a grasp of like what you could do on a hardware, like technical level, that I realized immediately watching this, like, oh, it is not possible that this is a Wii. Like, this is a new piece. Like, this is a new system. But then it immediately, like after the press conference, cuts to like the G4 professional people. And they're like, so was this an add-on? And I was like, no, like what?
Yeah.
It was baffling to me that people didn't get it, but it was just, you know, you watch that initial concept trailer, and you see the system itself in the background of one shot, and it is otherwise a trailer about a controller, which in retrospect was probably a mistake.
Yeah, and Wii remotes are present.
Yes.
And it is like just if you start to break down the Wii U and like how unwieldy it becomes, it's something that whenever, like, my Wii U is still hooked up to my TV in my home office. I recently got my hardwood floors redone, so I had to pack everything up. The Wii U got like an entire like giant crate to pack everything into,
right?
Because like the system itself isn't exactly small, and then that's fine. But then you have like all the Wii hookups,
right?
Like the sensor bar is kind of required to use functionality of that.
Yeah,
the storage wasn't great, so you probably needed to have an external hard drive dedicated to your Wii U if you were people like us, like, yep, with a lot of games. And even not that many games, because I think, what was it? It was 32 gigs was the
I'll limit. I'll have you know, mine was 8 gigs.
Yeah, because the white one was 8 gigs, and the black one, the deluxe version, a whole 32 gigs. You could hold, what, like, 3 Hyrule Warriors.
Thank God they really expanded that memory size for their next system.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is it, 512 megabytes for the Switch?
yeah.
Well, no, because I didn't the OLED. I think the OLED, the OLED's more. But
the
even
OLED
still,
was more. The original, like the Switch launch unit, I believe, is 32 gigs.
Yeah. And I think the OLED might be 64 out of the gate.
I think that's right. I don't remember. I immediately put a giant SD card in it, so I don't actually retain information on what the internal storage was.
I will say people get really bent out of shape over internal storage, but if the option is get this like $40 SD card and you're fine, like, that's fine.
It's fine as long as it is an SD card and not maybe like...
Not a proprietary Vita,
right,
stick.
Looking at you, PlayStation Vita and Xbox Series X. Like, one day maybe I'll buy a memory card for my Series X, but yeah, that thing's hundreds of dollars.
Terabyte.
Right. An amount of storage I can buy in a solid state hard drive for like $70, which is several hundred dollars if I want it on the proprietary memory card.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes. So revealed at E3 2011, looks very different than it would wind up looking. But yeah, people just didn't seem to get what it was. And it immediately became a problem, and we started to see that like maybe this thing wasn't going to catch on. Okay, they try to sort of catch back on next year, which you also attended.
Yes. So with E3 2012, the smell of desperation started to become apparent. I will say that I think that E3 2011, like that press conference, and like that, like E3 2011 was a totally fine year, because you had, it was that second year of 3DS games. Which is pretty strong, because I think it was like, Mario 3D Land. Oh, no, 2011 would have been when the 3DS, like, launched proper. That was its first, that was 3D Land, Mario Kart 7, Luigi's Mansion, and I think there was a fourth game that had a demo along them, too.
These were the games that started to turn it around for the 3DS. Like, once it actually started getting games.
Yeah, by the end of 2011, like, 3DS was cooking with gas. It was doing fine. It was a rocky launch, but they pretty much like figured it out.
It needed to launch like a couple months later. Like, they just didn't quite have the games yet.
Yeah, and the price was probably like, that was probably a miscalculation. But with Wii U, it was that E3 2011 press conference where I feel like that's when like you started to get worried, if you were even if you were the hopeful rube like I was, because they came out and they were basically like, this is the hardcore system for hardcore people, and we're like, here's a port of Arkham City, a game that came out in like 2010. And like, don't get me wrong, I think Arkham City's a fine game, but there, like, that wasn't exciting. And if you watch that 2012 press conference, like, those are the announcements that are there. That's when you have EA come out, or no, I think it was 2011 or 2012, the EA with their unprecedented partnership comments.
Yeah.
Like, there was all this hope and promise of like, this is going to be like the gamer system. Like, the Wii, that's for your grandma. This is for the real gamers. But they didn't actually have the games to back it up. The only things that they had were ports of older games that were already out elsewhere. Sometimes, in the case of Mass Effect 3, in a better form, because it was the whole trilogy. Like, that came out, like, I think almost literally the same week as Mass Effect 3 on Wii U.
Yep.
Was Mass Effect Trilogy for the same price.
Yep. Yeah, it was hard to defend. What's interesting is they did have stuff in like their sizzle reels and stuff of games that, you know, maybe not like, it's like Assassin's Creed 3 didn't hit, like the Wii U came out like a couple weeks after that game came out. Technically, it did launch on Wii U before the system came out. I bought my copy before the system came out. So they did have games that were like current that were like getting Wii U support, but that isn't what they leaned into. And instead, yeah, they spent a long time talking about ports of games that have been out for years rather than talking about like actual current games. And when those current games did show up, it was a passing mention in a sizzle reel. People talking about Aliens Colonial Marines without showing it, just saying like, oh, you can use the gamepad as a motion tracker. Even there, I think there's a, and maybe it was just based on what games they had ready to show, but I think there was a misunderstanding of what people would want to say, even from their launch lineup, because the Wii U did have a very extent. It had like 32 games at launch, which is a lot of games.
Lineup.
Yeah. And at this press conference, it kind of feels like they showed all the wrong ones.
Yeah. And they also, I mean, you had, I feel like my take on the Wonderful 101 has gone south over the years because I don't enjoy playing that game that much. But that was announced as Project P100 at E3 2012. And it was revealed, I think it might have been on G4's stream.
It was either G4 or IGN. Yeah,
maybe it was IGN. But it wasn't even a part of the press conference,
which is ridiculous.
Yeah, it was that kind of like the way things were spread out where it just wasn't exciting. And that was also Nintendo Land closed that. And I love Nintendo Land. But Luigi's Ghost Mansion being laboriously explained on a stage is not a thrilling end. Apparently, there was fireworks that were supposed to go off or something that didn't happen. I just remember the feeling of sitting in that theater after that being like, that's it. Like, that's all we're getting. And then they never had another in-person press conference again.
And once again, even with Nintendo Land, they showed off the wrong stuff. Like, they showed off, you know, Luigi's Mansion, which, like, great. You showed off Pac-Man. Congratulations. You didn't show off Metroid Blast or, like, Zelda Battle Quest. Like, the games that, like, really look like they're graphically nice. They look exciting. Like, that's the stuff you show off. But instead, you showed off what were essentially 2D top-down games on your HD system. Once again, just totally miscalculating what your audience is going to find interesting to an almost impressive degree.
Yeah.
But anyway, we still bought it.
Yeah. No, I was still excited. And as far as that desperation going too was, so E3 2012 happened in June 2012. Then I think for the next, you know, what, 5 months until it came out, I believe I had like 4 or 5 preview opportunities to play it. There was a press Wii U experience event in July. There was also a fan one. I went to both. There was also, I feel like it might have been playable at like the Nintendo store in New York too. There was the September reveal where they kind of laid out the dates, the date details and like launch games and stuff. That's when more Nintendo Land games were shown off. That's when TV was shown off. That's when Bayonetta 2 as a Wii U exclusive was revealed.
Yes.
But I just remember at all of those demos being shocked by how empty they were, because I was like, this is so much. Why isn't everybody playing this demo? It's so fun.
Right.
As I'm talking with Nintendo people and it's an empty space. It was a bummer. It really was, because I bought into all that stuff hook, line, and sinker. I remember E3 2012, where I was like, this is so great. I get to play all of these games constantly because no one's in this booth. Little did I know that no one was in that booth because no one wanted to play Wii U.
Meanwhile, I had the experience of, you know, from afar. I obviously wasn't at E3 at this point, but I remember skipping ahead slightly, getting my Wii U and excitedly mentioning that to people at work the next day and having them go, what's a Wii U? And people who were gamers, like people who actively like were invested in that, and they didn't even know it was a thing, and they were like, "Is it like the Wii?" And I'm like, "Well, it's a new system," and explaining like, "Yeah, I'm playing Assassin's Creed on it," and they're like, "On the Wii?" And I'm like, "No, it's like hardware wise, it's comparable to like an Xbox 360," and they're like, "But it's a Nintendo?" Like, it just didn't.
Yeah,
there was just a complete gap in knowledge. that was, yeah, it was amazing. I've never seen another console do that.
It feels like hard to do that.
Right.
I mean, we were on the cusp of probably, social media was already huge at that point, but I felt mm-hmm. like it only got more pervasive in society since 2012. But it's impressive to think of like how bad that all flopped.
Yep.
Like you really had to try hard to fuck that up, guys.
Yeah.
Bravo. And then the system came out and I remember going to get it at a store at lunch day. And I think I was the only person that pre-ordered it. Whereas I was used to even cross 360 and Wii and even PS3. It was hard to find those systems right away. Whereas Wii U, you could just like walk in and get one.
I will say the store that I got mine from got four at launch, and I got the second to last one. And I believe they did sell out. So
that's good
at least
them.
One store. Four was the appropriate amount to stock,
yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean they had a good read on the situation.
Yep.
Good planners at that retailer.
Which is actually why I got the white Wii U, was because I got there to pre-order it the day that pre-orders went live, and the two deluxe editions that they had were already pre-ordered. So I was too slow. But now I think mine's rare, so it wound up working out.
And my vivid launch day memories are it took forever to update the system.
It took forever to go to the menu.
Yeah.
God, that thing was slow at launch.
Yeah. It's even like, it's funny because it's gotten so much better, but it's still like abhorrent how slow everything is.
It's fine now. Like, I don't think it's that much worse than other stuff of that era. Like, if I compare it to an Xbox 360, I'm like, this is fine.
Yeah, the Wii U as it is today, it's not fast, but it's tolerable.
Yep, it doesn't stand out as being exceptionally slow, but at launch, it was, I mean, just like exiting a game, at like you're playing a Wii U game, you hit the home menu, it brings up that sub menu, and you hit close game and go back to the Wii U menu. Now that takes maybe 5 seconds to load into that menu. At launch, that was like a 30-second just hold on the loading screen to go to the main menu. And that was like everything. Like anytime you navigated it, it was a pause like that.
And that was one of the lasting memories that I had of the system overall. Like by the end of it, is it was a system where I enjoyed playing games on the Wii U as far as like the actual act of playing video games.
Yeah.
Doing almost anything else on the Wii U was like pulling teeth. Like I had a realization. Might have been like 2013, 2014 is when it kind of sunk in that like I still even do it on Switch, where I mean with Switch it's mostly the eShop because that's the only thing you can really interact with. Is that, I mean, I don't think the eShop on the Switch is really that great of an experience, but I boot that up about at least once a week and I go through the coming soon games to see if there's anything new, and I enjoy futzing around with that system. I did it with the Wii, I did it with the 3DS, I did it with the DS, where it's just like, oh, let me reshape my, like, resize my tiles, organize them. Wii, I'll make some, could you even do folders on Wii?
Not on Wii, I don't think.
No, Wii, okay, I will say Wii U folders, I did like organizing the Wii U folders, but like the Wii channel stuff, like, I liked playing around, I liked going to the Everybody Votes channel. I liked seeing what Mii's people came up with. On the Wii U, because of how slow everything ran, I did not enjoy engaging with that system. Even if like something like Miiverse was cool, it was so slow to move around that it just wasn't a fun experience.
Yep. Yeah, it's funny because I do think that on a purely conceptual like interface level, I think the Wii U might be my favorite Nintendo operating system. Like just for how it's laid out and how everything is set up.
It actually has music.
Yes. That soundtrack it slaps.
That eShop might be no fun to move around in, but I can listen to those bops all day, any day.
So once again, watch my Wii U video that came out the day this episode comes out. But I was going through, I'm like, I'm going to use the background music for this video. I'm going to use the Wii U system background music. There are like 10 different eShop songs. And then like three Christmas variants.
It rules. It's so great.
And every menu. So like there's like the main menu and it's a different arrangement on the TV than is on your gamepad. So if you listen to either of them separately, it's different. And then they can also combine and like harmonize. There's music that only plays on the parental control menu. And it is so good. Did you know there's an Amiibo setting menu on the Wii U? I didn't, but it has its own song.
Yeah.
And not like a short 30-second jingle, like a 3-minute long loop.
There is a composer at Nintendo that is out of a job because like for the Switch, they're like, are you going to make any music for the eShop? They're like, nah, we're good.
It's probably fucking Totaka. Do we know?
Yeah. Is he alive? Did they let him out?
I'm going to find out. It is Totaka. Yeah, so the man who scored like Animal Crossing wrote Totaka's song. That guy did the music for the Wii U, and it's good. Incredible.
It's real good. Oh, the Wii Shop channel. Wii Shop channel is eternal.
Oh, yeah. I think he did that, too. I think he also did the Wii soundtrack. Did.
But like the Wii U soundtrack, like great follow-up. The system itself might not have been a great follow-up to the Wii. The music, yes.
If we look at the Wii U purely as a musical album, it's an absolute success.
And that's like the Switch is like, we're not going to do music anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the band got old. They're just playing the hits. but Wii U came out and I had a lot of fun playing Nintendo Land. And then there weren't any games for a very long time.
Your greatest accomplishment as the director of NWR was to go into the Wii U era with a Nintendo website and leave the Wii U era with a Nintendo website. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that was pretty much my entire tenure as director. It's like, I think 2011 was when I started, and then 2018 was when it's like the Wii U just broke me. And then I left.
Like, now we can look out across the release schedule and go, okay, let's, like, what can we do on Fire Emblem? What can we do on Kirby? Like, yeah. And there's pretty much something every month or two. Where on Wii U, it's like, you better make some content about the spring game and the summer game. Like,
yep.
Because there's just nothing. Like, we have to be selective about what we review now. Whereas I occasionally find that we reviewed stuff on Wii U that I would not have expected us to cover. Just because there was nothing else there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a wasteland. And the launch lineup, I'll stand by, like, yes, there's a lot of ports, but like it's like 20 something games. It's legitimately, I think, one of the strongest launch lineups of like the past 15 years, as far as, I guess, 20. I feel like PS2 to some people is a really strong launch lineup. Not for me.
Depends on GameCube, your taste. Yeah.
Yeah. GameCube is a very strong launch lineup. Like 360 was okay. Wii and Switch were fine. But I think as far as like variety and breath, I feel like Wii U's got it, because like, I mean, it's hard with like Switch. Like, you have Breath of the Wild with Wii, you have Twilight Princess and Wii Sports.
We should note with Switch launched with, I believe, 4 video games.
Maybe a few more, but it was like Super Bomberman, 1-2 Switch, Zelda, Skylanders.
Was Skylanders there at launch? I don't think Skylanders
was there at launch.
Okay.
It was there at launch.
Because then I think the eShop was just Snipper Clips, Fast Racing,
Shovel Knight. There was a handful of launch day eShop games on Switch. But probably it like day one on Switch, 10 to 15 games tops, including eShop games. Whereas Wii U day one, I believe there was like 25 retail games and 5 eShop games.
I want to say it was 32 total. I have that number in my head.
Okay. Yeah, because then you had, I know Little Inferno was there on day one, Chasing Aurora. Trine 2, I think, was a Wii U eShop
that
launch
was
game.
Yeah, that was really early. That was actually one of the examples, and this did come up a little bit before the system came out. Like, on a purely hardware level, there are a lot of ways in which the Wii U was superior to the Xbox 360 or PS3. Nobody knew how to program for it, but like on a pure numbers level, like I remember Trine 2 being a game that like the developers of that made the comment that like they could do that on Wii U where they couldn't on other systems. And I believe it was because of like the Wii U had a better texture cache than other systems did.
Yeah. It was like two Wiis duct taped together.
Yeah. Oh, Call of Duty Black Ops 2 was a launch title, which I still maintain the Call of Duty games on Wii U were fantastic.
They were very good. Skylanders, that was a good port.
Yep. Darksiders 2 was not a good port, but I do like that game. Mass Effect 3 is a great port. Yeah. It actually uses the gamepad really well. You just better hope you already know what the plot is.
And also, it's arguably maybe the worst of the three games.
Not when you haven't played any of the other ones.
And Madden, which I'm sad because it's the last Madden to ever come out on a Nintendo console. I came across an article that I wrote where it was breaking the news that Madden on Wii U was not going to happen in 2013. But Madden 13, which came out in 2012, it's weird. That was so from 1991 to 2012, Madden came out on a Nintendo system every year.
Yeah.
We have not had a Madden game on a Nintendo system for a decade.
When did the 3DS one come out?
Launch.
Okay. So remember that one didn't, like, they didn't assign a year to it.
It also wasn't good. Okay. I mean, like,
yeah, I didn't
the
play.
Actual the raw game of football on the 3DS one, I believe I reviewed it, so you can probably see if my memory holds up true. The raw game of football that you played on it was fine, but like it didn't have like I think all it had was like a basic season mode and that was it, and maybe no multiplayer. Like it was a very bare bones game that I think probably in my review I'm like next year's will be better, and it never happened.
You're cited on Wikipedia and you gave it a 6.
Yeah, and I think I gave Madden on Wii U like a 7. And I think there's a thing there where I'm like, looking forward to its sophomore year. Nope. Yeah, man, I miss Madden on handhelds where it doesn't run like total dog shit. So not the PC version on Steam Deck. Which I've been playing. Guess what? If you want the experience of Madden on Wii U, but worse, and it's a new Madden game, by all means, get it on Steam Deck. The PC version of Madden is terrible. I've still put like 20 hours into it.
Similarly, the first comment on your 3DS review of Madden just says, at least they got a good base game for when they release Madden NFL 12 on the system. So, lots of optimism.
But I do, it's something that I've got a feature in me at some point. Maybe now's the time to actually finish it. Write motivation into connectivity at NintendoReport.com because it's something that I feel like I'm putting together just to have people yell at me. It's the passionate defense of EA's decision to not make Nintendo games anymore. Maybe not passionate, it's just that like I get it because EA legitimately tried hard on Wii and no one really showed up. Like, here's what sold well for EA on Wii. Boogie sold very well. Did the Madden games that they actually put effort into sell that well? No, they did not. Did Dead Space Extraction, a legitimately great Leica game, maybe the best on Wii, that did not sell well at all. Boom Blocks, I think, did okay. But, like, EA put some effort onto Wii. You know, we could debate as to whether or not it was good effort or not, but definitely like they tried to play to the strengths of the market, tried to make content that jived with Nintendo's audience. And if you think that like, you know, the stylized graphics of Madden Wii made it a worse game, like it still had the franchise mode and everything. It was unique. It was different. It was cool.
I did think that was an interesting choice because yeah, those late era Madden games have like their own unique art style on Wii that isn't anywhere else. Yeah. That I actually find very pleasant looking.
Yeah, it's like based off of, I mean, this is one where, I mean, maybe I'm corrupt in that I did some really cool feature stuff on Madden on Wii. But there is, I mean, this is it's a 12-year-old feature that I did that is based off of like an even older thing. I believe it was the Olympics in like, what, 2008? That there was like a Coca-Cola commercial that had like very stylized athletes. And that was apparently their motivation for how to design the Madden players like that. And like, it really is like, it's super cool. And I believe I have features that have like quotes from the art director talking about that. And I really like, I'm passionate about Madden on Wii, but going back to the EA of it all, like they wanted to get in on Wii U on the ground floor. And they wanted, I believe, as the story goes, I think that EA wanted Origin to be like the Nintendo eShop on Wii U. Like that was kind of their like, all right, Nintendo, we're going to support you, but we want something back. And then Nintendo was like, no. And EA was like, all right, we're out.
Yeah.
System comes out next month. Here's your dev kits. We're done.
Yep.
And honestly, might have been done out of spite, but EA
it
made
probably
the right call.
Wasn't the wrong call. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I remember even having conversations with people at other publishers around that time that they're like it was probably like 2013, somewhere around there. And a couple people that, you know, publishers that put out retail games on Wii U were like, well, you know, like it takes time for, you know, new consoles to catch on, like it'll be fine. And it wasn't. It was bad.
Yeah. Yeah. But we did have some good experiences playing games on the system.
Nintendo Land.
Nintendo Land is rules. Great. I, over the past couple weeks, have been gathering footage for the video that went up today. And so I've been playing like a bunch of Wii U games in like very quick 15-minute increments of like, I need footage of this game. Play it for 15 minutes, move on to the next game, which has been like a really cool way to kind of re-experience that library. I did go back and played some Sonic Lost World since I haven't played it in a long time. And I know that you weren't super into it, but I still think that Sonic Lost World is a pretty good game and it's buttery smooth on Wii U.
I will say probably the Wii U version probably plays a lot better than I think part of my reason for not liking it is I don't think that game runs on Steam Deck that well.
Yeah, it runs real. I mean, it's 60 frames per second on Wii U, and
it's almost like
smooth.
It was designed for Wii U.
Maybe, yeah, it could be.
I mean, it's one thing if I had like a slight aside about the Steam Deck. It's why it will not replace my Switch is that the Switch is an authored experience. The Steam Deck is like it accidentally works for your game.
Yeah, yeah. Some games are more specifically catered to than others, but yeah, they're not making bespoke versions of their games for the Steam Deck. They're just kind of adjusting the settings a little bit. But yeah, Sonic Lost World, like I said, that port of Mass Effect I thought was great. I played a little bit of Yoshi's Woolly World, which I kind of forgot existed. It's fine. It's very pretty.
I think Crafted World is better.
I think Woolly World is prettier, but I think Crafted World is more fun.
Yeah, yeah, I'll agree with that.
Fast Racing is still great, though that's also on Switch. Yeah, and then, you know, Xenoblade X is incredible. Star Fox remains incredible. Despite doing that, I still have some Wii U games that I own because I have a problem when it comes to Wii U games in that I just tend to buy all of them. So despite doing that, I still have Wii U games on the shelf that I have never put into my system, including Deus Ex and Splinter Cell Blacklist, games that I'll bet many of you forgot came out on the Wii U. Blacklist, I think, was a pretty late game as far as Wii U ports go. Ubisoft kind of stuck to their guns longer than a lot of the other companies did. I guess speaking of Ubisoft, the other notable thing to mention, of course, as far as like seeing the Wii U downfall happening, one of the big Wii U exclusives early on was Rayman Legends, which of course wasn't a Wii U exclusive. When was that announced?
I think it was supposed to be coming out Q1.
Because it was supposed to be like a launch window game.
Yeah, like right? I think it might have been dated for like January or February 2013 or something like that. And I just remember being on Twitter at the time, you know, before that old thing that might not exist anymore. Mm-hmm. Rich George, who now I think he works at some other video game company, but he was at IGN for a long time. And then he worked on Nintendo's PR for a while. We used to interact with him. And then he left Golan Harris, Nintendo's PR agency that they work with. But when he was at IGN, he became the Nintendo guy around the time of the Wii U. And I remember him having a tweet where he was like, oh, there's some interesting news that we're going to report on tomorrow. And the news was that Rayman Legends was being delayed from like February 2013 to August or September, and that it was coming out on all platforms. Yeah. And people did not think that was interesting. They thought it was mean. And like, Rich wasn't wrong. It was very interesting because it definitely I'm on one with the Green Bay Packers right now. They did not win a game for a month and a half. It was miserable. I will say that during times of that, as we're talking about Wii U, some comparative feelings of how like you're covering a thing, you're into a thing, and you're like, yo, man, I think Nintendo's great. I think the Packers are like the best NFL franchise. And then it's like, oh, we're going to lose 5 games in a row, or we're going to put out the Wii U. And you're like, oh, shit. And yep. then you just realize what's happening, and it just keeps on spiraling out of control until you put out Wii Fit U a year after the system comes out and call it a launch window title, and then lose to the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, well, and you're watching everything happen, but like, you're not going to get off the wagon.
Yeah, yeah, like I'm
you're
still
just
here.
Gonna you're on that wagon, and you're gonna ride it into the river.
They came out with Game and Wario, which honestly, secretly, pretty good.
It is,
and they beat the Cowboys. So like, we're going to the Super Bowl. Wii U's gonna sell 100 million units. Let's go.
This analogy gets really confusing the more I listen to it. What were the final numbers for the Wii U sales?
Not great. 13 mil.
That's great. Those are great sales. Everybody owned one.
The crazy thing is that like, I don't even really think you can knock Nintendo for not putting out good games on it, as evidenced by the fact that most of those games have been ported to Switch and have sold pretty well outside of Tokyo Mirage Sessions. But you even look at it like they had maybe they didn't have the firepower on day one. Maybe the Nintendo launch lineup of another 2D Mario when 2D Mario was oversaturated. Maybe Nintendo Land didn't have the appeal. But if you look at the games that they trotted out over the next couple years, like Super Mario 3D World, excellent game that came out mm-hmm. in 2013. Super Smash Brothers was 2014. Great, great, great Smash Brothers game. I mean, you even have things like Super Mario Maker, Xenoblade X, Star Fox Zero, Bayonetta 2, Tropical Freeze, which was early 2014, a year and a half after the system came out. And you had arguably one of the best platformers of the past 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Splatoon.
Yeah, Splatoon, New Super Luigi U, Mario Kart 8, that behemoth. Like, there's a lot of great games that came out on Wii U. Pikmin 3, which I think might be my favorite game on Wii U. Like, that game is incredible. And that came out summer 2013. It's not even like these games were that far after launch. Like, yes. Would it have been a better world if, like, Pikmin 3 was out, like, December 2012, 3D World was out summer 2013? Like, yeah, that might have been better, but I don't think it would have actually solved the problem. The problem was the fact that it was a thing that was, like, hard to communicate to people why they even need this.
There's rarely been a better example of why marketing and messaging and branding and all of that is maybe more important than the games you're making. The other example of that would be the entirety of Sega during the 90s.
Yeah.
Sega did it well. Wii U did it very poorly.
And then Sega stopped doing it well. Like, yes, Sega did it very well. They did it very well until, like, 95, when they're like, the Saturn's out tomorrow!
Right.
Buy it, you herbs.
But they did a really good job of convincing people that the Sega Genesis was more powerful than the Super Nintendo, which is incredibly wrong. But, like, they made people believe it.
Yep.
They made people believe that Sonic the Hedgehog was a better game than Mario, which I would argue is factually wrong, but like, you can decide right in connectivity at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Super Mario World is so slow. Yeah. Look at how fast this blue blur goes.
Yeah. We didn't design the levels for that, but I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it'll work out in the end.
But yeah, so you like Genesis is an example of this being handled perfectly. It's why, like, I know I've talked to people about the book Console Wars, and I've heard some people's critique of it is that it focuses too much on the marketing. And I'm like, bro,
that's the whole story.
The Genesis was marketing. Like,
yeah, I'll say that's not my problem with that book.
Right. Yeah. And that, like, your problems are totally valid. But like the Genesis, like, that was not a system carried by the quality of its games. There were good games on Genesis, don't get me wrong. But like,
that was a great lineup. I love the Genesis.
Yeah, that wasn't what made it sell. What made it sell was incredible marketing. And the Wii U was a perfect counterexample of that, of a system who, like, thanks to the Switch, we know has some of the most highly rated, best-selling, beloved Nintendo games in decades, maybe ever. But it doesn't matter if nobody can realize that your system is a system and not a controller. And it's just it's fascinating. Someone should make a documentary about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Someday.
Someday.
There's two games I'm going to call out. Maybe three, but I think two definitely fit fit the indie games doing things that can only be done on Wii U and unfortunately probably dying because of it. Spin the Bottle, Bumpy's Party.
Yeah.
Did you ever play that game? That game rules.
Yes. Like once.
Yeah, it is a bizarre game where it's basically like almost like a social experiment party game that uses the Wii U in very weird ways. And also Affordable Space Adventure. I think Affordable Space Adventure is one of the coolest games I've ever played, largely because of the way it plays in co-op, where I played through the majority of that game with two of my buddies, where you had, you know, one person with a gamepad with all these fiddly knobs on the touchscreen, someone controlling the boat, and then the third drunk friend who just would like turn on the light on the boat and arise monsters, which that may or may not have been me sometimes. But like Affordable Space Adventures is really one of the coolest games, and it's a shame that it is basically locked to Wii U because I don't think it sold well enough to be like, let's completely redo this game for another platform.
Yeah, some of those, if you're too closely tied to the hardware, it becomes borderline impossible to port.
Runbow was also incredible on Wii U, and that's a game that is on Switch. It's even on 3DS for some reason. I believe it was a new 3DS only game.
Oh, you needed that horsepower.
Yeah, I mean, legitimately, you might have, because I think it did support online multiplayer. It might have.
It would have had to. I mean, that's the game.
But Runbow was a game that I felt worked really well on Wii U just because of the fact it was so easy. Like, if you were invested in Wii U by the time Runbow came out, you had enough controllers to be able to play Runbow with eight people. Because you probably had a Wii. You probably had, like, eight Wii remotes already. And, like, that was a blast to play, as it was. And also, a game that I think the people who made it aren't cool with each other anymore. Sports Ball on Wii U. Love that game.
Yeah.
Weird joust game where it had a feature where using the gamepad microphone, one person could provide commentary on the game that was happening.
That was another feature that I really enjoyed. Monster Hunter Tri Ultimate 3, the third.
Portable.
Yes. Where when you were playing online, if you didn't have a headset plugged in, you could use the microphone in the gamepad to talk, which was awesome because it meant that like everybody you were playing with conceivably had a mic, which is super helpful in Monster Hunter.
Super helpful in like all video games.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, a little emoji of Link with cheerleader pom-poms pretty much conveys every emotion I could ever have. But sometimes talking's easier. Did you mention Little Inferno in that?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Little Inferno. I think we mentioned it when we talked about the launch. But that,
okay.
That Little Inferno, for some reason, getting a Christmas update.
Yes, I have soon. To buy it again. I'm going to buy it again.
It is, like, Little Inferno is incredible. I've played through that game, like, five times.
So, Little Inferno, once again, this system came out, like, I was pretty fresh out of high school. Well, it's 2012 by now. I was a ways out of high school and currently in the process of... I was dropping out of college at the time. But
stay in school, maybe.
Yeah. But Little Inferno was one where like I had a friend over and we were just looking for like we were just bored and looking for something to play. And a lot of times we would just like either go on whatever like the PS3 or whatever store and like buy some random game and play it. And we bought Little Inferno one night. Like, what in the world is this? And then just sat there for hours. Just enthralled with Little Inferno. And honestly, I would probably credit that game, like I'm thinking back on it, I feel like I could probably credit that game with like...
For why you burnt down your house?
Yes, that. But with like, with being interested in indie games, like I'm trying to think of another like indie game before that that I like really got invested in.
I mean, did you play Wordle of Goo on Wii?
No. Not at the time. I played it later, but like not... Before
also,
Little Inferno.
This is going to be me getting a little testy. I believe we gave that a 10 out of 10. I think it was Nick DeMola did the review on Nintendo World Report. When the Switch version came out, that a quote from our review came out in Acolytes trailer, and I saw some people that will remain nameless like dunk on the fact that like, oh, this game isn't that good. Why would you give it a 10 out of 10? And it's like, fuck off. It's just... Like I thought there was going to be more to that statement than that. It's just one of those things where, like, I don't think World of Goo is a 10 out of 10 game. It's a very good video game. But like, it's, no. Like the people like games, goddammit.
Yeah. There are some of those games where it's like, if you, I'm so glad that I didn't have to review Little Inferno, because I have no idea what I would score Little Inferno on, what I would say I like about it, what I would criticize about it, like, because it's the weirdest, most non-video game fever dream of an experience that I think is good, but I have no idea how to assign a number to it. And I think that kind of goes for a lot of their, is it Tomorrow Corporation? Is that the right company?
Yeah. And they were, I don't think they were called Tomorrow Corporation when World of Goo came out, but it's the same developer, or at least Kyle Gray, I think, is involved with both of them. 2D Boy was the name of the company when they made World of Goo, but now I think Tomorrow Corporation does put out World of Goo re-releases.
They also did Human Resource Machine, which is also very fun and, like, lots of dark humor, but also can teach you a lot about basic programming in a fun and approachable way, and I like that game a whole lot. But yeah, Little Inferno is incredible, and I am 100% going to buy it again on Switch to play that DLC. I guess with that, we'll kind of close out on just talking about the legacy of the Wii U, because I do think, like, one of the fascinating things about the Wii U is how much it served as a prototype for something that would do much better, that is hilariously similar to it. Because essentially all the Switch did to the Wii U's format was say, what if we put the guts of the system in the handheld part instead of in the part that's attached to your TV, and then market it way better? And that has resulted in one of the best selling consoles of all time, as opposed to one of the worst selling consoles of all time. And it's amazing how, like, because it's a very similar, you know, you lose the dual screen. Like, it's in a way, it's less functional than the Wii U, but it was just executed so much better and completely changed the fortunes of what is kind of the same system in a lot of ways, and has much of the same library, which I find fascinating.
Yeah, I love the Wii U, but also I understand why it died.
Yes.
I'm so sad.
God, okay. I can give all the credit, like, lots of bad marketing. That particular ad, which I don't even remember the context of now.
No, I don't either.
Where the guy just said, I'm so sad.
There is some gonzo nonsense that Nintendo put out during the Wii U era. Like,
because there was generic action figure guy.
Yeah, like, just everything about that. I feel like it's the kind of stuff that appeals to a very narrow segment of the overall Nintendo demographic.
I think it was
but
me.
It just, yeah, no, but like that's what I was going to say, is that, like, but I am a part of that, like, non-specific action figure, like the even down to the E3 presentations where they had, like, Robot Chicken interstitials.
Yeah.
Like, it's just all of that. Like, it's so goofy and fun. Even the puppets. Yeah. For Star Fox Zero, like, that seemed unnecessary in retrospect.
Yeah.
But damn, it was cool.
They were just trying. I guess there's an argument to be made for, like, at some point they stopped trying to attract new people and just tried to keep their core audience invested.
Yeah.
Like you said, like, it speaks to a very specific niche, and I think that niche is the very core of their audience, like you and me.
Yep. Yeah, and then even with all that as well, you have what they did with Switch, where they just found what works and they keep on doing it.
Yep. I'm terrified of their next system.
Yeah. We're kind of on a pretty consistent, like, every other one sucks. So
yeah.
Not that I mean I love the GameCube until my dying day, but that didn't do that well.
It's you kind of like
looking up like Wind Waker stuff when we did that episode. It just reminded me of how, like, by 2003 the GameCube lost.
Yeah, no, it's this cycle of, we're gonna make a really good system, and then we're gonna make a system that will sell poorly, everyone will remember extremely fondly, and we'll have games that'll be really convenient to remake later.
Yep.
Like there's a dead cycle where they just work on making the games for future systems.
Yeah.
And if you buy into that system, then it's like a preview program.
Pretty much. Yeah. The Wii U was the preview to the Switch. You got an exclusive preview 5 years before everybody else.
And it's still the only way to play Devil's Third.
Yep.
With that, I think we'll call it an episode.
Yeah.
If you have any fond memories of the Wii U, maybe your favorite Wii U game that isn't like one of the big Nintendo ones, and you are allowed to say Devil's Third, even though that's Nintendo published, just to make me feel better. Write in, tell us about it. Connectivity@NintendoWorldReport.com. You can follow us on Twitter @ConnectivityNWR. You can rate us on whatever your podcast listening thing of choice is. And don't forget to play Twilight Princess. I'm making fairly good progress. I know Matt started it, but for some reason he's playing it on two different systems.
I'm at the Forest Temple. That intro, very slow.
It is so long.
I really was expecting to be like, yo, Twilight Princess is a truth, let's go, but like, no.
It picks up eventually, but yeah, it is a slow game. And it has its moments. Like once you get into a dungeon, hot dang, it's a good time. But you spend a lot of time wandering around outside those dungeons. But I guess I should save this for the episode. yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.